Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 558. Was in like four or five cities on the Oddball Comedy Tour. Let's see. Left L.A., went to Tampa, then Charlotte, then Atlanta, then New York. Okay, four. I feel good. I'm doing the Tonight Show tonight. It is the first time I've ever done the Tonight Show, and I am nervously excited about it. Then, so what is today? Monday the 11th, I think, of August, and then I'm doing the Doctor Who wraparound special on August 23rd for the series premiere of Doctor Who with Capaldi. Capalgist, I'm calling August now. Okay, enough about me. I'll talk about myself enough. Jeff Bridges came back! He asked to come back! How does that... what life is this? That we had Jeff Bridges on last year, and they were like, do you want Jeff Bridges again? He's got this movie called The Giver that's coming out and would love to talk about it on the show. Comes out August 15th. And I said, sure. Now, the first time, I was very nervous with Jeff Bridges. We talked a lot about work. This time, we totally bonded. It was amazing. I will listen to this podcast several times because the wisdom that this man, this dude, if you will, lays down about life and relationships and choices and decisions is fucking amazing. And by the way, I don't know if you saw that he threw out the first pitch at a Dodger game the day that we did the podcast with him. That night he was throwing out the pitch. And he was kind of nervous about it, so Jonah said, oh, you should just bowl it, like the dude. And I think that's actually on the podcast. And then he fucking did it! He actually did it! So I get this frantic call from Jonah, like, he did it! He bowled the pitch! I told him, he bowled the pitch! So that was very exciting as well. But all in all, an absolute pleasure. Jeff Bridges rules, and here we go, the Nerdist Podcast number 558, with the aforementioned Jeff Bridges.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
We should have a spa day. Let's all go to a spa. We'll get some cucumbers on our eyes.
Man. I know some really cheap ones in Koreatown.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do this. I mean, we're in a snazzy part of the city. We could find.
We can do that.
Throw a rock. Throw a hot stone.
Yeah. How are you feeling? Are you good?
I'm good, man. Yeah.
Good. How are these like mega long press days for you?
Not bad, you know, kind of, especially this is pretty fresh, you know, right now.
Yeah.
It's not too deep into it.
Right.
You know, you've done those ones where you're, you know, the guy's in there in a hotel room, you get like 70 interviews, you know.
Right.
That's pretty challenging, but that can be fun too, you know, especially when it gets towards the end and it starts to get really psychedelic. How is my mic positioning here?
I know
it's rather. Great. It sounds good.
It sounds okay.
So
okay.
If I did too, does it?
Yeah. No? Does that work? Me?
This is
no.
So
it sounds better for Jeff.
Jeff is sitting up right now. He's positioned the microphone in such a way that it's
and
like
I'm talking.
Yeah, it's I've never. This is a good way to do it. It's basically the midsection torso is being used as a mic stand.
It's slightly phallic.
Slightly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The unfortunate thing is that it matches your shirt too, so it kind of looks like you've.
Yeah, or I could do, maybe this is better. What do you think of like that?
Ooh. Oh, that's amazing.
Now we're it's like, no, look. I want one of those.
Do you want one of those?
You have an extra one?
You're sort of the MacGyver of these junket interviews.
But if it's sounding cool, maybe I don't even need one. Maybe I'm missing.
I think it sounds fine.
I'm just going to go like that.
Yeah, down there.
Going phallic. Man.
And then we'll just try to not pretend that
full phallic.
You have a giant-headed yellow dong that's pointed at your face.
Mine's red.
Yeah.
Oh man.
It's from like a dog.
From all the stroking. That's
I'm real lonely, Jeff. I'm real lonely. I need to get out and meet people. Do you ever get to at the end of this kind of day, how do you sort of unwind from one of these types of things?
What do I do? God, it varies, you know. It varies. I don't, you know, just probably collapse, you know, it's like the general thing, the real long ones, you know. This is a today's a pretty short one.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I'm kind of warming up to it.
But it's you're about to get the onslaught.
It's going to be, I've got about, you know, a couple of weeks of it, you know, so.
Oh, man.
But this is just the beginning, first day.
And is this the kind of thing where they fly you all over the world and you have to do
No, it's just New York.
Oh, that's not bad.
Actually, today is pretty cool because I get to talk to all the international press, which I enjoy that.
I've heard some people don't enjoy that. I was talking to somebody. They say it's just the process of having to like wait for the translation and then having people like it just takes a long time to do those interviews.
No. I mean, all the guys who were interviewing me today all speak English,
okay.
So there's no problem.
Did you hear a lot of Lebowski Grande? All right, I know what this one's about. I'll field this one.
Yeah, that
dude. All right, I got it. I think I know what he was asking.
Yeah.
I was rifling through your Twitter feed, and I was very delighted by your article about successful marriages in the Huffington Post.
Oh yeah.
You tweeted a link to this thing.
I did a what do they call those kind of interviews? You know, where the guys ask, you know, people ask questions, and there's a person who fields all those questions.
Oh, you did an AMA for Reddit.
For Reddit. Yeah, so that was out of that. Yeah, I haven't done too many of those. That's pretty interesting.
The Reddit AMAs are really, really interesting if you've never done one, because it is an onslaught of questions that happen immediately, and then you're kind of scrambling around to try to answer as many as possible.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this a little bit, because, 1977, is that the date?
Of our marriage?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I would love to know the secret to a good relationship, and you had some tips. So would you please share some of those?
What comes to mind? How old are you?
I'm 42.
Oh, you're 40. So you could not be my child.
No. No.
You could be my child. How old are you?
32.
Oh, yeah. You could be my child.
Oh, that'd answer so many questions in my life.
He immediately calls his dad. So, fuck you, dad. You're out. Jeff Bridges is my dad now.
Yeah.
But no, what was the question again? I got off.
No, we're just talking about the secrets to a successful relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, how do you maintain? Because it's not just about marriage, but it's also the secret to maintaining any relationship long-term, an interpersonal relationship. I thought there were some good tips in there.
Yeah. Something that just occurred to me as we're talking, one of the things is the knowledge. I've been married for 37 years now, and I had a hard time getting married, man. I'll tell you about that in a second. But the knowledge now, after being married so long, is that it keeps getting better. You don't hear that too much.
What is it about it that gets better?
Well, it's intimacy. Isn't that the high that we're all looking for?
You know,
intimacy with ourselves or the world, or, you know, having a woman, you know, to be intimate with. And the marriage creates that playing field, you know, and it just keeps getting better and better in an emotional way, in a sexual way, in all ways. And, you know, that kind of keeps you wanting to come back, you know, to know, even in the tough times. And Alpha, it's another thing I kind of learned over the years, is that those tough times are, those are the times when you really, when the gold can really be found. You know, they're kind of the key. Because if you address those and are really intimate with each other and listen to each other's stories about how they are, you know, what their reality is like, that's where the intimacy can be found and where love has to grow. You know, you come to this places in marriage where you say, oh, I'm out of here, man. This is terrible. This is terrible, you know. And if you can kind of hang with that and be with that and I guess, they, you know, love each other. What is love? You know, so opening your heart, you know, when you feel you can't, you expand. And sometimes you can't. You know, sometimes it's just too much. Then you go off and you love somebody else. But if you can hang in, you learn in those tough times how to grow and you know, I've been fortunate that I've been successful in those hard times, that we've, you know, gotten deeper and it's more of a groove, and that makes you want to come back and get more of that.
I think one of the most challenging things in relationships can be, you know, you can go through all those kinds of things, but you ultimately in some senses have to be fortunate that you and the person you're with have the same goal, ultimately.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the deal. And if the goal is intimacy and getting to know each other, you know, it seems like the basic fight that I have, and maybe you guys, if you relate to this, that I have with my wife is, you don't get it. You know, like, you don't understand what a drag it is to, you know, to see you. Is the Bob, you know, what is it?
Yeah.
You know? And then I resent that shit. You know, I said, well, you don't understand, you know. And that is that's so true, that none of us get what it's like to be the other person. And we all have these stories that we cling on to. This is it. And they're stories, man. It's as the dude says, you know, that's just like your opinion, man. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It's just, there's stories, and it doesn't mean that the story isn't true for that person and that my story isn't true, but they're stories. They're not locked in stone. And so you get with the other person and you say, okay, that's true. I don't get it, and I probably never will really get it. But it's a story. You know, if we can hook onto that there's this story involved, that it's not the ultimate truth. And then you get to, well, what kind of story do we want to tell,
mm-hmm,
in our own personal lives and with each other? And like you say, you know, is this something we want to do? You know, what are we looking for? What kind of story do you want to tell?
Yeah.
And what kind of story do I want to tell? Maybe we can tell that story together and help define that, you know.
Are you and your wife the same people to each other that you were when you first started getting better?
Well, I told you earlier, I was going to tell you the story about getting married, because I had a terrible time. You know, but I was a young guy. What is it? Must have been, it was 37 from 64. What's that? Math?
Oh, math 27.
So I was 27. And I have this theory, and again, it's just my opinion, that the fear of marriage that a lot of guys have, and I certainly have, is the fear of death. You know, that if death is the ultimate end of the story, you know, how it all worked out, that marriage is a giant step in that direction. You know?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I got married last year.
Oh, so you feel that same thing?
Yeah, what I tell people is, like, it becomes like a locked groove on a record where you're like, oh, that's one thing that's done now.
That's
like,
right.
That's
and
a
this
constant.
Is the, yeah, and no more girls, no more messing around. And I remember when we lived together for the, you know, usually it's about 3 years, you kind of hang out to test it, and we break up and get back, you know. And Sue said to me one day, you know, said, you know, and there was no animosity, or it was just a very clean thing. She said, I really, you know, I can feel your love for me. I know you love me. And I know that you're having this problem, you know, this decision, you know, kind of thing, and I respect that. But my clock is going off. I want to, you know, have a real. I'm going to get married to somebody. I want to have kids and do that. And I'm going to go back up to Montana where you found me and start to do that in a couple of weeks. But I just want to let you know.
You know, TikTok.
Yeah. And so I said, oh shit, you know, and. Just prior to this, I gotta tell you another little weird story. My bachelor pad in Malibu, incredible. It was an incredible place, and that's where Sue and I lived for a long time. And it was, you know, it's really high up in the hills there, and there's a kind of a valley and another mountain on the other side. And on that mountain, there's no houses or anything because the land is just too volatile, you know, earthquakes and stuff. Or I don't know why there's no houses on there, but there is a giant head. A big rock, it's maybe about three times the size of this room, and the rock is a face. It looks like, you ever see the movie Zardoz?
Oh, of course, mm-hmm. Yes.
So it looks like that big, got rock with the big mouth and the eyes, you know, and there it is, and as the sun goes across the sky, the expressions kind of change on it, you know, we'd often look at that face, and we'd say, God, I bet the Chumash Indians must have been over there. You know, there must be a kind of a great spot. There's probably petroglyphs and stuff in there. We got to go over there. So one day we get their dogs, and we just go as the crow flies. Just there was no path. We go through the brush. It took us about an hour. It got there kind of quicker than we thought. And we're out of breath, and we're clawing into this guy's mouth, you know, and we're looking for the petroglyphs, and there's no petroglyphs, and dogs are panting, and then we sit down and look over to our little place, and this thought comes to mind. I said, look at that little house just sitting there on a hill, allowed to be there on this big, you know, mountain, and so this, but we're really a little speck, and all of a sudden I hear, coming up through my ass, up through my body, through my heart, into my, so, and tears start to ejaculate out of my eyes. I mean, I'm just like, And she says, you know, what's happening? I go, oh, nothing. And then I hear, through this energy that's coming through me, you will now ask this woman to marry you. You will now. I go, and Sue says, what's wrong? I say, nothing. And she says, tell me. And I say, oh, I have this terrible feeling. She says, what is it? I have this terrible feeling that I'm supposed to ask you to marry me now, and I'm so frightened. And she says, well, you don't have to do that. I said, good, let's get the fuck out of here. And we laid out of there. And so now, you know, cut a couple of weeks later, she lays this thing on me. You know, I understand how you feel, but I'm going back up to Montana, and I'm thinking about sitting in the guy's mouth, and I say, oh, God, okay, I'm down, I'm on my knees, I say, you know, will you marry me? And she says, oh, well, when do you want to do it? I say, well, we got only a couple of days, I don't know how long I can hold this, you know, this marital thing, you know. She said, okay, and we got married in a couple of days, and I was, you know, still had this, you know, thoughts we were talking about. Now we're up in Maui and the beautiful seven sacred pools at Maui, you know, for our honeymoon. And all I could do is just smell the rotting papayas. And I'm just still pouting, you know. I say, oh, what have I done? This is fucking terrible, you know. Sue was saying, oh, let's annul this. This is, I said, no. And that went on for a couple of years. Literally, a couple of years. And thank God she didn't kick me to the curb. She put up with that shit.
Well, first of all, Sue sounds, hats off to her for saying, like, hey, you know, I'm so impressed by people who don't stay in relationships that they don't feel are good for them and can stand up and go, you know what? I want this. And if you don't want that, that's fine. I'm going to go get what I want. Like, I have so much respect for that, because how many of us have stayed in relationships that you sort of felt like, well, this isn't really fulfilling to me, but I'm going to stay in it for whatever and not really pursue what I want. It's an incredible gift to give yourself to say, like, hey, this is what I want, man. And if you don't want this, then fine, but I'm going
to
go do it.
But then, opposite, to put up with my shit for that long. You know, saying, why, you know, and thank God she did, you know. And I think one of the things that kind of also helped me a lot through that period is whenever I think of, you know, was this the right woman for me? You know, because that's always the kind of in the back, you know, did I make the right choice? You know, I think about sitting in that guy's mouth, you know, and what that was all about, you know. And I also think about my first meeting with her. Did I ever tell you that story? I'm making a movie called Rancho Deluxe in Montana. probably in like what, 70, maybe, I don't know, you know, 3 years before 70, so, you know, like, you know, 74, somewhere in there. And Sam Waterston was in it with me. Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, wow.
And Richard Bright. I don't know if you know that actor. And we're shooting this scene up in Montana at a place called Chico Hot Springs. Mm-hmm. And this is this big pool, and it's filled with, you know, natural hot spring water. And we're plotting a burglary or something. And I keep noticing this girl who works at the place, and she's a gorgeous girl, and she's got broken nose and two black eyes, and I cannot take my eyes off this girl. I'm doing that thing that us guys often do with magazines, you know, how you use that as a kind of a shield. And she would bust me every time, you know. And I finally work up my courage to ask her out. And I say, you know, hello, hi, you know, would you like to go out with me? She said, no. I say, really? She says, no. It's a small town, maybe. Well, I'll see you around. And her prophecy proved true. And, you know, we met in a bar and, you know, danced and fell, you know. It was instant. While I was looking over the magazine, I was gone, you know. Anyway, fell in love, you know. There's kind of a long story that I won't, you know, get into now. But anyway, we finally get married. Now we cut about 10 years later. And I'm opening my mail, and I get a card from the makeup man on that show. And he said, I was going through my files, and I came across a shot of you asking, talking to a local girl I thought you might like.
No way.
So I have a photograph, and if I had my wallet, I could show you. I carry it. It's my prized possession of the first words that I ever said to my wife.
That's amazing.
And asking her, and her saying no. And I have a photograph of that moment.
Oh, wow.
So whenever I think, you know, this might not be the girl for me, I think about, well, what do you mean? I got sitting in the guy's mouth and said that photograph. I said, I think this is the one.
That's funny. With my wife, now wife, well, like the first, I took her back home to Hawaii. That's where I was born and raised, in Hawaii. And we went on this hike up to these old, you know, World War II bunkers. And it was above my town. And I remember sitting with her, and it's, you know, I'm taking this girl that I really like back to like my, and showing her around my, you know, my former life. And I was like, it was kind of the same thing where I'm like, I was seeing where my house was, and I was like, oh, it's so tiny. So many like weird little moments and heartbreaks that seem so important that are now kind of washed away with the grander scheme of life, and you're up above and you see the ocean and the mountains. And I was kind of like, yeah, I think I want to just be with this girl for the rest. It was a very,
it's in a weird feel. It's weird feelings.
It was a really weird feeling.
I'm just working on me right now.
Are you married?
I'm totally available. Yeah, single.
And have you avoided the thing? Have you gotten close, or are you divorced? Or
no, I've gotten close. I've been in two relationships in the last 10 years. One of them was for 7 years, and the other was for 3. So I'm not afraid of commitment.
But 42, man, that's how old you are, right? 42.
You
held out. No, I'm saying that. My theory is you hold out as long as you possibly can, man.
I do hold on as long as I possibly can. I'm always optimistic, like, oh, I can make this work, or I can do this, or I can do this. And then sometimes relationships, it just doesn't work out. And
yeah, you hold out, man. Because,
but I don't. Yeah, go ahead. No, because why?
Because you're dying, man. and you want the real cool thing, you know. And you know, you only got so much time. You want the thing, so you hold out. And you know, if you're lucky, you'll crumble. You know, like, who are some of the great bachelors? You know, like Warren Beatty. You know, how long would it take him to finally, you know?
A long time.
A long time.
Clooney's never been married, right?
He just got married. He's gone. So I think that's been kind of my MO with a lot of things. Making movies is that same kind of thing. I really don't want to engage. You know, I do my best to not do anything, you know, not work.
Yeah.
until the thing is too groovy to not, you know. And I try to not, you know. I have a painting I did of a dream I had, and in the dream I'm going down a river in a rowboat, and there's a wall on each side of the cliffs on each side of the river, and the river is filled with these huge whirlpools. And in each whirlpool, in the vortex of the whirlpool, is a beautiful jewel. And my task is to navigate through these whirlpools and get down the river. And I'm rowing down like this, and I'll see one of these jewels, and I'll get kind of mesmerized by it, and I go, oh, shit, look at that, so beautiful. Oh, shit, oh, almost got caught. And I'll pull out, and I'll row it like that. And then I'll see another one, and I'll go, oh, fuck, oh, that looks so good. Oh, shit! Oh! And that's the painting, right? And the title of the painting is Jeff Makes a Decision.
Oh, that's incredible.
And that's my process, you know.
That's really incredible. Wow. Well, that makes me... So a couple of things. I want to talk about that for a sec. But firstly, I want to say, when I was younger, I do remember feeling that thing that you mentioned about, like, well, this ultimate commitment is sort of the death of a bunch of other choices that you may have had before. Yeah. But what I realize now is that... You know, finding that one person, which I'm not afraid of at all. I would love to find that person. Is it's what you said. It's, yeah, you might not be able to fuck everyone in the world, but why would you want that when ultimately intimacy and this kind of very evolved intimacy and growing together with someone is ultimately way more special than, you know, being distracted by all the jewels.
Yeah, there's a line in the new Tom Petty record where it says, "I love you more than the sins of my youth."
Yeah,
which is like, oh, that's great, fucking great.
It's the perfect
that.
Line.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah, it's such a great line.
That's
wonderful. I've been digging all those interviews. Interviews, but that long. What is he? He's just got a radio show.
The town hall thing on Sirius XM. Yeah, I was listening to that today.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. I was loving that and hearing about. The Wilburys.
Oh, he tells this amazing story. Great? Like, yeah,
it's how that so all good. Happened. Oh, it's yeah.
It was just supposed to be an extra track on a George Harrison record. They were like, "We need one more. We need like another track." And then he's like, "Well, how about?" You know, it was just very casual the way they all got together, the Wilburys.
Those guys got together casually.
Oh, yeah. Very casually. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me, you know, George says, "Let me call up Bob. I think maybe he'll, you know, hey, yeah. Bob, we're putting this group together. You want to be in? Yeah, okay, yeah, he's in, man.
Yeah." And then they drive down the three.
Now we got to get Roy Orbison.
Yeah,
you know?
And he was playing a show in Anaheim. Was it like? And then they all drive down.
They all went down there. You know.
Just fucking, it's like George Harrison and Dylan show up. You're like, "Hey man, want to be in a band?"
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Why not? Why the hell
those
not?
Coke bottle glasses.
Yeah. He was just like, the way they described it, that Tom described it, was just, he's like, "Yeah, sure, yeah. Sounds fun." Yeah.
Oh man, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested to hear about your decision-making process. You're distracted by the jewels, but how do you keep yourself on the path? Like, what do you say to yourself to make sure that you're staying on the right path?
Well, how cool the path is, you know. And the farther you're going down it, you're made aware of how powerful that path is, and how cool it is, and how precious, and you don't want to, you know, you don't want to mess up, you know, you don't want anything to ruin that, you know.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, I'm a jealous guy. You know, I don't want my girl messing around, and, you know, and she doesn't want me messing around either, you know, and that would dissipate what we have, you know.
Yeah.
One of the things, too, you know, when I was younger, and before I got married, I had that thing about, all the jewels, you know, because I love that, you know. But what you're not privy to is what's behind that door of marriage, you know, all the things that you have no idea what that kind of intimacy can give you, and what children and grandchildren and all that stuff, you know, what the joy of that is.
Yeah.
You know.
I noticed that when I was like 38, 39, I was super freaking out about, oh my God, because it's the first time you really become aware that, oh, there's an end point to everything. You know, like at some point there's an end point. When you're younger, it's just like, oh, time. I've got tons of that.
Isn't that wild?
And then you start going, oh, wait, I'm kind of at the halfway point right now. Yeah. So you freak out.
Right.
And now at 42, I feel so much calmer and not as desperate to have to be validated or place my self-esteem in other people and things, and just be comfortable with... I'm actually, it's a very weird feeling. Like, I feel like I'm breathing more fully. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I just feel better about myself. I just feel more comfortable with myself, which is... I didn't expect. I was like, oh, when I'm 42, they're going to have to put me in a home, and I'm not going to be able to do anything, and I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to have any vitality. It's like, I feel good. Like, I feel really nice now. Yeah. It's kind of cool. Do you feel that way, too?
Yeah. It's part of you doesn't change. Right? You have that experience that you just feel there's something in you that, you know, that, or I can talk for myself and me, that just like when I was a kid, I feel basically the same thing. I do notice, though, now the whole mortality thing, I'm feeling that, you know, more and more each year, because as you know, they pick up, man. The years, they go faster and faster and faster, and I say, oh yeah, I'm going to die in a second, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, but I got a lot of shit to do. Shit, I want to do this and do that. And you better get to work. You know, you better get your stuff. That's one guy in my head, you know, and the other guy is saying, will you please relax? You know, do you want to have the rest of your life a giant homework assignment with all, you know, please, you know, come on. And I, you know, I'm kind of in between those two poles, you know, and I kind of surf in between those two things and, you know, try to relax as much as I can in that. But talk about not get it, you know. My wife, that's one of our, you know, one of our classic battles is, you know, you don't get it. You know, I'm, you know, you've got all these, this giant agenda and I'm at odds. I mean, you know, I got to go along with it. That's not my thing, you know. My thing, you know, but I, so that's a challenge for our, you know, how we balance that, you know.
Yeah. I think there's an interesting, you know, what I'm starting to learn, which seems to be applicable to everything that I'm doing is, what is the word doing? It's the difference between the action verbs and the being verbs. It's like you said, oh, I got a lot of work to do. I got to do, I got to do this, I got to do this. And then the other part of your brain is like, why don't you just fucking be? Like, why don't you just exist? Like, why don't you just enjoy the fact that you exist and be and not have to place so much validity in running around and having to do a million things. Like, you know, just be, just enjoy. And I think that's why it seems like everything moves so fast, because we just feel so much pressure to do stuff all the time. Not that you should be completely inert, but I mean, just taking those moments to really enjoy the present, you know?
Yeah. But it's funny, man, when you're fortunate, and I'm, and you know, being alive is the basic, I guess, fortune. You know, just, but I am presented with such wonderful opportunities. You know, and I try to, you know, like I were saying before, not engage in them. But some are just too groovy to not do. You know, they're just, and it's like, and talk about being, and you say, yeah, I guess, you know, there's a whole kind of thing about, you know, living life, you know, and doing what you want to, and then having life kind of live you and just surfing what is, you know, what comes your way. And there's such amazing stuff that comes my way that not engaging is, you know, very, you know, very challenging. I don't know quite how to do it. It's just
well, I think there's a difference between experiencing things because you want to appreciate the experience, and running around and doing stuff because you're trying to fill some sort of a hole.
You know,
like, of course, if you have the opportunity, it's like, oh, we're gonna take you to this amazing, you know, glacier, and you're gonna get to hang out with whales. I'm like, well, yeah, I want to do that because that sounds amazing. As opposed to, oh, I have to do this thing, or it's not, my life isn't gonna be complete. Like that. Yeah. I think those are different motivations. And I think, and I'm not great at it, but I think it's much better to try to experience things because you just want to, you know, like you want to expand the scope of your horizons.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a mystery to me.
What's the most amazing thing you've gotten to do recently?
Well, my music, you know, that whole thing is just, quite amazing to me. Crazy Heart really set a fire under all that. You know, I've been playing music since I was a kid and, you know, having, you know, a bunch of guys that I play with, and it's kept alive. And then when Crazy Heart came down the pike, that was when I really tried to push away, you know, really didn't want to engage, did my best.
Oh, wow.
For a lot of reasons, you know, one reason, when it first came to me, the script was pretty good, but there was no music, you know. So I said, well, if there's no music, you know, then the movie's not going to be any good. You got to have music, you know. I say, wow, that was a close one. I almost got sucked into that jewel, you know. That was very close. And then my buddy T-Bone Burnett, you know, he said, have you read the script, Crazy Heart? I said, oh, yeah, why are you asking me? Are you interested? And he says, well, I'll do it if you'll do it. You know, I said, oh, really? I said, there's no music. He said, well, we'll come up with that, you know. I said, okay, I'm in. And now I'm really, you know, filled with kind of fear and anxiety because while it's a wonderful, you know, it's like a dream come true.
Sure.
But it's like the dream come true, like, you know, you're the... you know, the receiver in a, you know, the championship football game, and you're running out for that long ball, and the quarterback has passed it to you, and you say, oh, please, you know, am I going to catch it? And the anxiety of, you know, okay, here, you want to, this is your dream? Okay, now here's your dream.
Yeah, because there's so much emotion invested into
yeah,
it.
Are yeah, are you going to be able to catch the ball? Are you going to, or is it now, you know, in a dream, it's kind of safe, but now it's real, and what are you going to do about it? So you know, again, it was one of those things where I was frightened and anxious, but, you know, fuck it, you know, it's too groovy to pass up. And if I fail, if I fall, you know, okay. And if I, you know, don't, that's okay. I'm just going to go in it for the experience, you know, and that it's frightening, you know. So it's not a matter of like, you know, well, this is interesting. What you said about, you know, doing because you have to do something, and I'm drawn towards and I'm repulsed by these challenges that life presents us. It's the weirdest thing, like the marriage, you know, all these things to resist. That's my MO. You know, that's how I go into things. You know, are you into rebirthing? Do you know about what that's all about?
No.
I remember years ago, this is probably prior to even being married, watching a TV show, and these doctors were talking about this theory of rebirthing, and it was all about that your initial dilemma in life is being born, and how you approach that dilemma, you know. You know, you're in this womb, you're feeling really groovy, and all of a sudden there's these contractions, and something else is happening. But no, shit. Ah,
you know, no choice of your own.
Yeah, no choice. Yeah, and what are you going to do about it? And then you do something about it, and you have some kind of, you know, scheme how you're going to get through this thing, and that you duplicate. That's how you deal with problems. And so the guy says, so what you do is you go talk to your mom about what that birth was like, and she'll tell you, and then you lay over your first trauma that you can remember. And so I went to my mom, and we had a very close relationship, and we sat, you know, kind of a little closer than we were, like, looking at each other, kind of like, actually, not kind of like The Giver, like this movie, yeah. Now that I think about it. And I said, tell me about my birth. She goes, well, you know about that. I said, no, tell, you know, I forget, but don't tell me. And so she starts to tell me, and I kind of got into a long story. Should I go on to the long story?
Please, this is incredible.
So prior to my birth, my parents lost a child to sudden infant death syndrome. Uh-huh. You know, can you imagine? Uh-huh. I don't know if you don't have any kids, but anyway, can you imagine a year old? You know, you go up to, wake up your baby and your baby's just dead. You know, yeah. There's nothing to do. And the terrible thing for them. And their doctor who delivered all their babies, Leon Bellis, that's my middle name, Leon, named after this guy. He says, Dorothy, you got to get back up on the saddle here. You got to have another kid, you know. So she did. And... She said, and I was so excited. I was going to the hospital, and it was the days when they used to lash the women down to metal tables and shoot them with a spinal to, like, numb their bodies, you know. That's how, you know. And so she was on the metal table, and she's telling me now what the nurses are, you know, the nurses were having a conversation about their cars and stuff, and I'm kind of like, I don't know if I heard this story, but I kind of remember, you know, remember this, you know, she's saying it. I'm kind of sensing it as a memory.
Oh, that's crazy.
And she says, and the nurses, they shot me up with the spinal. And my mom says, and all of a sudden, I remember this phrase, she said, it was so wild. She says, it felt like I was falling backwards down a velvet-covered escalator. Mm-hmm. And I heard the nurses say, oh, the baby's heart is stopped. Oh, the mother, oh, this shit. Oh, no, the shit's going terrible. Calling the doctor, you know. The doctor comes in, Leon, and he starts to slap my mom across the face. Wake up, Dorothy. Come on. And she's strapped down, and they say, okay, unleash her. And they, you know, take her off, and she sits up. And, the baby's turning around, because I had turned around also during this whole thing. Turned her, she says, oh, the baby's gone, and the baby's, and it's out. And that was my birth experience. Now you're supposed to put that over your first trauma, you know, that you remember. And my first trauma was, I was about, I guess, 4 or 5 years old. And I'm in my living room, and my mother comes through the front door in a mink stole and very short hair. And she used to have this beautiful long hair down to her waist. And I just, it looked like my mother turned into a gorilla or something. I just looked like a weird thing. Ah! And I go and I run and lock myself in the bathroom. And that's me turning around in the
oh,
room.
Oh, wow.
And then my father comes at the bathroom. But he says, Jeff, come on out of there. I'm going to count to 10. He's knocking on the door like this. And that's the doctor slapping my mother in the face like that.
That's.
And then finally, I just come out. And I find, oh, that's, you know, my mother's not a gorilla, you know. And that's kind of, you know, when I look back in my life, that's how I deal with challenges. I say, oh, fuck this. This is terrible. Just fuck it.
Fight.
I'm just going to die. Let's, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't want to do it. It's just too tough. And then, oh, fuck it. Let's go bowling. You know, let's just do it and see what happens, you know. Like from here, this is an interesting chat. Tonight, after I go do these interviews, I got to go pitch a ball in this Dodger game.
Oh, shit.
And I'm anxious, man.
I did that once.
You did it once.
I did it at the Dodger Stadium a couple years ago.
That's what I'm doing it, man. So... It is, get any tips?
The tip. Well, here's what I did. I actually met with a pitching coach the week before, and I'm like, yeah, I want you to teach me how to throw a fucking ball because I don't want to be a bad YouTube clip for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And so
I dug 50 cents.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Okay. So
I wonder if that was like a gag or something, or did he really?
It worked.
Yeah.
You know. Good.
Here's what he or do the Bill Murray and just fucking throw it into the stands.
Yeah,
he just purposely threw it into the stands.
Oh, that's a good.
So here's what he taught me is that. Your left hand is sort of the guide. So are you right-handed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the left hand with the glove is sort of aiming at where you want to throw. So as the hand swoops across, like right where your left hand ends up where you want it to go is where you throw and follow through. And that's what I did. And I did not embarrass it wasn't a perfect pitch, but I did not embarrass myself.
Yeah. Made your mom proud.
It made my mom very proud. She's a sports fan. To the extent where... And if you want to do this, I fully support it. I was so excited that I didn't fuck it up. I ran full bore at the catcher and leapt. I leapt off the ground and I saw him going, no. And I wrapped both legs around him, just wrapped and held on. I was like, oh my God, I'm so relieved. Because those crowds, you know. But you know what?
Yeah.
I was not real well known when I did that. Everyone loves you, so you're no matter what you do, you will be fine.
Well, I worked with a coach yesterday. You know, I played Little League. I was a pitcher in Little League. You know, and Bo, my brother, was a huge athlete. He was scouted by the Dodgers. He played at UCLA under Wooden. You know,
wow.
I mean, he was really a great athlete. But I studied with this guy yesterday. He coached me. And I pitched, you know, and I, you know, knocked it into the dirt a few times. And then I finally, you know, if you were target practicing with a rifle or something, you know, you figure out where your error is. And then you compensate for it. So now where I'm aiming for the pitch, I'm aiming about 30 feet higher than the catcher's mitt and about 6 feet to the left.
Jeez.
And that's my target. So I'm aiming here. I'm pitching up there, and that's the closest I can get. So we'll see if that theory works.
You should just bowl the ball down. Maybe.
Oh, there you go. That could be a cool idea, man.
That's a cool idea.
Well, isn't
it? It's a little dude thing, man.
Yeah, it's a nice reference. It's a very L.A. movie. It's the L.A. Dodgers.
Ooh, that's tempting. Oh, yeah, man.
But will people get it right away? Well, they just think, did he try to throw it underhand and then just fuck up?
Well, yeah. What's crazy is that, again, another great metaphor for life is basically playing your margin of errors, knowing, like, this is what I normally do, so I'm going to be, instead of continuing to hurl it off course, I'm just going to refocus a little bit and know that this is what I do. But I love the idea that you figured out that the way that you problem solve is, or the way that you overcome things is fight, 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 ah, fuck it.
Yeah.
And then everything turns out fine.
That's right. It's weird. I got a bowling story to tell you. This goes back with the Lebowski, you know. The dude, you never see the dude bowl. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
But in the original thing, I had some bowling scenes, and so the brothers, you know, they said, we got to get a bowling coach. So, there's a bowling coach there coaching me, Steve Buscemi, and John Goodman. And he's like a top bowler, like one of the best bowlers in the world. And he's got an assistant with him as well. And so I'm saying to him, now the dude, you know, how do you think the dude might prepare to bowl? You know who Jackie Gleason is?
Of course.
The Honeymooners?
Do you know? Of course.
So you know Norton, you know?
Yes.
Art Carney. Yeah, Art Carney. And you know how he was signing a piece of paper, you know, he would, you know, make sure he was ready, you know, and get prepared, you know. And I said, it might be like that. Do you think the dude is kind of like that? And the assistant starts to laugh like this. You know? I say, what's going on? He goes, nothing, like this. And I asked the master bowler, he goes, you know, like this. And the guy keeps laughing. I say, tell me. And he says, no, you tell him. He points to the master bowler, and the guy says, okay, I'll tell you. He says, there's a kind of a Zen thing to bowling. Like, the pins are down way before you throw the ball. As you're pulling your ball back to throw it, you know, you've got to be in the right headspace to do that. You got to be totally relaxed, totally one with the pins, the ball, you know. And I would literally take, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, you know, doing little twitches and little things to relax, you know. And it would get to be a champion match, and all the guys on the bench, you know, would be, you know, squirming and saying, you know, finally they would yell, throw the fucking ball, you know, like this. And I said, so what happened? He says, well, I had a complete nervous breakdown, and I had to go to a psychiatrist and, you know, work on it, you know. So I say, you know, so what do you, how do you deal with that? What do you do? He says, I get up and just throw the fucking ball. don't think about it at all.
My dad was a professional bowler on the PBA, and so that's I bowl the same way. So my dad passed away last year, but he was also a great coach, and he said, yeah, you bowl the way I did. You just get up and throw the fucking ball. He's like, he said the same exact thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got to wrap it up because you have a bunch of interviews. So two quick things. Number one, are there any gems worth jumping out of the boat for, and how do you know when to do that?
I never know. I resist. There's plenty of gems, man. They're all over the place, those damn jewels. God, I'm trying to just get down the river, man. Come on. But they're all over the place, and I resist, and then I get pulled in by the most beautiful groovy ones, you know. I'm open anyway, but I, you know, just push, resist, you know.
Ah, fuck it.
Yeah.
Throw the fucking ball. Yeah. So, and then, of course, we should just, when does The Giver come out?
Oh,
and
The Giver.
Yeah, The Giver.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about that. God, this movie. Yeah, The Giver, that comes out August 15th. And it's a movie I've been trying to get made for, God, almost 20 years.
Oh, so, wow.
I originally wanted to direct my father in it. And as a matter of fact, somewhere in some garage, there is a version of this movie with my father playing the Giver. And Bud Cort, you know, Bud
Cort. Of course, yeah. Yeah.
Harold Amont, he narrates the whole thing. Bo's kids, one of them shoots it, you know, photographed it. One is playing Jonas.
Wow.
We did the whole book, so that's around somewhere. But I've been trying to get it made, and you know, talking about, you know, decisions and stuff, I came to a real interesting crossroads with that movie because I realized once it was going to be made, Harvey Weinstein's company and Walden, financed it. I realized that it was not going to be my vision, and I was very attached, you know. And I had a decision to make, kind of like, you know, the marital decision or all these decisions that come up in life, you know, should I engage or not? And because I knew that they were going to do things that, were very different from how I imagined it. And I gave myself a little test, which I often do in these times where I say, you know, kind of project myself in the future. How am I going to feel if I let this go? How am I going to feel if I engage, you know, and I really felt shitty if I let it go. I can imagine, you know, putting all that time and all that. So I kind of decided I'd do it, and I did it. The context in which I kind of made the decision was do this as an experiment. And that's usually the thing that makes my shift from the fighting no to, you know, fuck it and go for
let's
it.
See, it's what, like, happens.
Let's do a little experiment on yourself. This is a chance for you to dance with the universe. You know, look at, you've got all these, it's not like you've got shitty people to work with. Harvey Weinstein, look what comes out of his oven. You know, the great movies he's made in Walden. Play, dance, dance with this thing. Don't take it, you know, my mother gave me, you know, great advice that I still use today all the time. She's sending me off to work, you know, as a kid, and you have this anxiety, and we've been talking about anxiety this whole interview, basically. She said, remember, have fun, and don't take it too seriously.
That's great advice.
And that is really good advice. So I went in it with that spirit, and I'm so glad that I did, because I think the movie came out brilliantly. I got to work with Meryl Streep, these great young kids, you know, Bretton Thwaites and Odea Rush, you know, they're just so great, and I had a great time making it, and I'm pleased with the outcome, and it's not exactly like I imagined it, but it's cool.
Well, you enjoy the process, and
yeah,
ultimately having fun and like you said, experimenting and not being afraid, because when you're experimenting, you're not as afraid of failing and trying to control things so hard. Yeah, you're like, hey, let's see what happens.
Yeah,
let's go down this path and see what happens.
That's great.
But this has been such a fucking great chat with you. This is wonderful. Nice. I hope you had a nice time.
Good hanging. I hope my
your dick mic is looking really good
works.
There.
It's captured.
It's good to see you, Jeff.
Good seeing you.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
All right.
Good, man.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.